Well, good morning. As we sometimes do on a Sunday, we're going to have sort of a two-part lesson this morning. And I've sort of entitled it Music and Lyrics. You know, sometimes we get up in the pulpit and we talk about the singing we do here in worship to God and, you know, why we sing and why we don't play instruments and, you know, the kind of songs we ought to sing in worship. This is totally different. I'm going to talk about music in our daily lives because I think music is a big part of our lives. And the first session that we're going to have on this, we're going to look at music as the creation of God, or certainly something God has granted to us. It's a big part of our everyday lives. We sell products with it. We entertain one another with it. We express ourselves and express sentiments that we believe are important to others. We listen to music that other people make. We make music ourselves at times. And so music is a big part of the human experience. In fact, our scripture reading this morning was about a man by the name of Jubal. He was the great, 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 great grandson of Adam. Okay, so he's a few generations down from Adam, but Genesis 4 verse 21 tells us that he was the father of all those who play the lyre and the pipe. So any of us who play wind instruments and those of you who play string instruments, we can look back to Jubal as our father. Apparently, he invented musical instruments, and that was a great thing. But, you know, in those days, it may have been a little longer between generations even than today. But, you know, four or five generations was probably 2 to 250 years of time. And considering Adam lived 800 years after having Seth, he was alive and kicking and well when Jubal was running around, you know, playing on lyres and harps and making them for other people. And, you know, I'm sure they were singing and they were playing musical instruments in the days of the very first man who was created. And so this has been a part of the human experience from the very beginning. Now, Jubal may have invented some musical instruments. The question is, did he really invent music? I think that's an important question for us. Job was probably one of the first books written in the Bible, chronologically. It was written before Moses wrote the Pentateuch. Job probably lived sometime between the flood and Abraham. But, you know, in Job 36 and verse 24, one of Job's friends is speaking, and he said, "Remember that you should exalt his work of which men have sung." And so at the time of Job, men were singing the praises of God. Over in Genesis chapter 31, Jacob has two wives and a large family and a lot of flocks and doesn't get along with his father-in-law Laban particularly well. Laban has defrauded him at every turn, and so he sort of sneaks out of town in the middle of the night, takes his family with him, and Laban is upset about that, and so he catches up with Jacob. And in verse 27 of Genesis 31, he says, "Why did you not tell me so that I might have sent you away with joy and with songs, with timbrel and with lyre?" And so when they got together for feasts, they would entertain themselves with music and celebrate and have joy. In Exodus chapter 15, beginning at the first of the chapter, we find Moses and the Israelite people celebrating the rescue of God from the Egyptian army and the fact that the Egyptian army had been destroyed in the sea. And in doing that, they sing the praises of God in celebration of his rescue. And I think down in verse 20, his sister Miriam and the Israelite women are singing and dancing and playing timbrels. And so, you know, we find music in the lives of these people as they go through. In the scripture, the passages really don't make a big deal about them. It's just part of their daily lives. In 1 Samuel chapter 16 and verse 16, we're told that David was a skillful player on the harp. And so he was a harpist. And in fact, in 1 Chronicles 13, King Saul had already rebelled against God. God had let him know that he wasn't going to keep him around as king very long. And so Saul was depressed. He was down in spirit. Even an evil spirit from the Lord was plaguing him. But they called on David to come and play soothing music on his harp, and it soothed the heart of King Saul. In 1 Chronicles chapter 15 and verse 16, David instituted singing and playing of instruments in worship to God. And because he was a prophet of God, that was fine. That was God's will that he institute that in the worship of the people of the day. And of course, that carried on over into temple worship when the temple was built. When the Messiah came, we're told that Jesus sang hymns with his disciples. In Matthew 26 and verse 30, he had instituted the Lord's Supper, and they sang a hymn, and they went out into the Mount of Olives, we're told. Then God, through the inspired men of the New Testament, commanded us to speak to one another and to teach one another in psalms, hymns, and spiritual songs, making melody in our hearts to the Lord. That's Ephesians 5:19, Colossians 3:16. And so many of the psalms certainly were hymns, were songs of praise to God. All of the hymns, I mean, by definition, a hymn is a song of praise. And so God not only wanted us to teach one another and speak to one another in spiritual songs, he wanted us to worship him and offer up songs of praise to him by blending our voices together when we assemble and to speak to one another and to praise him. Now, the question is, did God happen to like an invention of man, and that was music? And he said, well, good job. I like the sound of that. I think I'll roll that into worship. I think I'd like to hear some of that in praise. I don't think so. In fact, music is not even reserved for humans alone. If you look at Revelation chapter 5, verses 9 and 10, we're told that the four living creatures and the 24 elders who were around the throne of God sang a new song saying, "Worthy are you to take the book and to break its seals, for you were slain and purchased for God with your blood men from every tribe and tongue and people and nation. You have made them to be a kingdom and priests to our God, and they will reign upon the earth." And so they're praising the Lamb for his willingness to offer himself as a sacrifice for us and to purchase with his blood men like us on behalf of God and to make us a kingdom and priests. And so, you know, if men invented music, now you have these heavenly beings partaking in something men invented. I think it becomes obvious pretty quickly that it's a little silly to think that. We could talk about, you know, the Genesis account of creation doesn't say, and then God created music. But, you know, all you have to do is open your window in the springtime and you're going to hear music. And it's not man-made music. It's God-made music. It's God's little musicians. Around here we have finches and sparrows and cardinals, all kinds of songbirds that make beautiful music in our backyards. One of my favorite are mockingbirds. They have an attitude, but it just seems like they have a never-ending repertoire of songs that they do. One study found maybe mockingbirds seem to have up to 1,100 different songs they could do. It's amazing. We used to have one in our neighborhood. You would think somebody's telephone was ringing because they had gotten used to hearing someone's telephone ring, and they would sit in a tree and make this perfect telephone ring. You thought somebody's phone was ringing. They are amazing creatures, and yet they are making music. And about all of the elements of music that you can think of are in the bird, on the songs that birds make. We just got through singing the birds, their carols raise. This is our Father's world. And so on the very day that God created Adam and put him in the garden, the first time he lifted up his ears, he heard music in the garden because there were songbirds in the garden making their beautiful music. And it was, I'm sure, no doubt similar to the songbirds that we hear today. I believe that music is a lot like mathematics. I'm not a mathematician, but I think most mathematicians will tell you that man doesn't create mathematics. Man discovers the mathematical relationships that have always been out there. And they study and they do experiments and they have hypotheses and they test their hypotheses and they come up with new, at least new to us, mathematical relationships. They pass them past other mathematicians who will scrutinize them and see if they can find the flaws in them. And they say, hey, you've discovered a mathematical relationship we weren't aware of before. But everybody admits they're not creating mathematics. They're discovering mathematical relationships that have always been out there. And either God created them when he created everything else, or they've always been in the mind of God, one or the other, and I can't answer that question. But man doesn't invent mathematics. They have invented notation on paper that they can use to convey their mathematical concepts to the minds of other mathematicians. But besides that, they're not inventing it. And I believe music is the same way. Men didn't create music. We can use the creativity that God has created us with to take music and take the concepts of music and create new ways of expressing ourselves using that. We have come up with notation for the ways to communicate musical phrases and harmonies and lyrics to other musicians, but we didn't invent music. We simply use the creative power that we have because we were created in the image of our God. in order to express ourselves through the music that he's presented to us. When you pluck a string or you pass air across human vocal cords, they vibrate. And when they vibrate, or when you blow air through a wind instrument like Jubal did, and the sound that comes out of the end of that musical instrument is vibrating, and the vibrations are transferred through the atmosphere, through the air that God created in this world in which we live. And those waves of sound reach our ears, and they go into our ear canals, and they vibrate this super sensitive little membrane eardrum, which is connected to some tiny bones that transfer those vibrations to the liquid, the fluid in the cochlea tubes, and the vibrations are picked up by these sensitive little hairs inside the cochlea. And so those vibrations are transferred to the auditory nerve that converts it into electrical impulses and take those to our brains. And by the way, we have two of these so we can hear in stereo. If a sound is made, I can tell if it's over here, back here, because I can hear in stereo. And so my brain takes these electrical impulses and it analyzes those and processes them. And it is amazing the way we can distinguish between sounds and even the textures, and I can tell if it's a guitar string or a trumpet bell or a trombone or a human voice. It is amazing what we've been given, and yet God created all of these elements that work together to where we can enjoy these wonderful sounds that come our way. If you were to go to a piano and strike the middle, what I consider middle A4, it would make a note, and we perceive that note as being the note A. And if you were to measure it with an oscilloscope, the frequency of those sound waves are 440 cycles per second. That's 440 hertz. Because those vibrations reaching my eardrum are 440 cycles per second, my ear perceives it as the note A. If you double that and make it 880 cycles per second, it still sounds like A, but it's an octave up. It's an amazing thing, you know, and we didn't invent all that. Jubal took what sounds he heard and found out he could pluck strings and do the same thing, and he made use of all of that technology he didn't really understand, and yet God has made things this way. Now, it's interesting because there are human responses to certain combination of notes that are, I mean, there are differences in taste from culture to culture, but folks, there are some things that are just natural to human beings. And if you play a first and a second together in the scale, they contradict each other. They conflict with each other. We call it dissonance. There is, we call conflict between two people dissonance. Well, we got it from the musical field, musical concepts. Two notes that close together have a dissonance. The sound waves from both of those notes rattle with each other when they hit our eardrum, and it feels uncomfortable. We don't feel comfortable with that. And sometimes we use dissonance in music on purpose to make people feel uncomfortable temporarily. And then when you take it to a sweet-sounding harmony, it's like it's a relief from the dissonance. I mean, we use dissonance in our music, and yet those kind of responses to those harmonies are just natural for us. If you take an A scale, A in the third and the fifth and the octave up makes a nice major chord. But it's interesting, you know, there is a relationship between the number of vibrations per second in one note and the number of vibrations for the other that always holds true in every scale. Doesn't matter if you start on B flat, if you start on C, if you start on F. The third is always going to be a ratio of 5 to 4 on the number of vibrations compared to the A at the bottom. The fifth above, do mi so, the fifth is going to be 3 to 2 in terms of the number of vibrations per second. And of course, the octave up is exactly double. It's 880 hertz instead of 440 hertz for those two different A's. What I'm saying is there's a physics behind this. There's a science that God gave us, and we studied it, and we created equipment that could measure these kind of things. We've discovered this stuff, but it was always there. Music has always been there for us, and we didn't have to invent it. Music is powerful, and when we get into our lesson in our 10:50 session, we're going to talk about the power of music, because from a moral standpoint, we need to appreciate what God has done for us. But from a moral standpoint, we need to understand that music is powerful, and because of that, there are certain responsibilities that it places upon us. We can communicate without music. We can speak to one another. We communicate information. And sometimes written or spoken word can elicit a real powerful emotional response. Any of you who enjoy reading and enjoy reading novels and enjoy reading things that excellent writers have written will tell you we get emotionally involved in the things that we read, and especially poetry. You know, poetry is sort of designed to go along with as much of the feeling as it is the message. But the most powerful and influential combination is to take poetry and put it with music that enhances the emotion of the message that we're trying to get across. And God knew that, and I believe that's the reason that He commanded us to sing when we come together. In Hebrews 10:25, we're told not to forsake the assembly, and the reason is because we come together to encourage and to exhort one another. It's encouraging. And by the way, God's saying, while you're there, I want you to sing to one another. I want you to sing to me. And I think God knew that sound doctrine is of primary importance. But once we've got the doctrine right, and make sure the lyrics of those songs are teaching sound doctrine, God knew that we could sing those messages to one another, and it's going to have a lot more emotional impact and power on us than simply speaking it. And so we do it all. Okay, we proclaim the truth, we study the truth together in detail in Bible classes, but we also sing the truth to one another, because it is a powerful way to communicate important messages so that we get the feeling and the emotion as well as the truth involved. Music is powerful, and it can have an influence on our thinking. And so in our next lesson, we want to explore the ways that music can enrich our lives and make us better people. And it can be a wonderful thing in your life, but it also has a flip side. And there's music out there of all kinds. And we need to emphasize the importance of using caution when we make decisions about what kind of music we listen to and the kind of music to which we are regularly exposed, because it can have a major impact on us. God's concerned about our spiritual well-being. We need to make wise decisions in this life. Well, that's the lesson this morning. If you're here and you're not a Christian, you certainly need to be. And if you're interested in becoming a Christian, we can help you with that this morning. If you're a child of God and there's sin in your life, please get rid of that. If there's something we can do to help you with that, if we can pray with you and encourage you, we would love to. If you're subject to the invitation this morning, let us know while we stand together and sing.